Welcome one and all once again to New World In episode 45. After 3 weeks of finally back to numbering these things.
45?
Yes, 45.
Wow. We're making the big time.
I mean, I'm sure it's closer to 50 if you don't count. I believe the fall preview was a two-part we didn't count. I think E3 post-imprint.
There was about five or six in total we haven't counted so far.
Yeah.
Because we've definitely been doing it for well over a year.
That's true. Getting old.
It is getting old. It's soon time to put it out to pasture. But before we lament getting old, we are going to discuss Tokyo Game Show this week, as well as what we've been saying for the last 3 weeks, as the fall gaming season kicked in, as our previous two podcasts showed. But we're going to start with the Tokyo Game Show, because I always start starting with game conventions, because generally speaking, that usually means there's a ton of news. If you aren't a fan of handhelds, though, this was kind of a piss-poor show for you. So Chad was a bit disappointed.
Yeah.
But... Sony officially, well, I guess they pulled back the door on the system before, but they kind of announced a ton of new details and Japanese support for the PlayStation Vita at Tokyo Game Show in what has to be perhaps the worst press conference I've ever sat through in my life. I didn't think it was possible to create a video game press conference that had no video games for 95% of it.
Wait, really? Was it that bad?
There's
no gameplay.
Yeah, they had, like, one gameplay montage, like, maybe 15 minutes in, and then the rest of it was them talking.
Wow.
I mean, they showed demonstrations of, like, they set the calendar on stage. Who does that?
Wow.
That's a classy maneuver. I don't know. I like it.
Yeah.
That is a special maneuver. I don't know. I mean, as we'll get into in a second, I mean, I think this is what you would call the reverse hype show, where I think a lot of the momentum the PSV has built up over the year kind of diminished, partially because of the piss-poor showing that they had at this conference. Not only was they eliminated the gameplay, but there was also, they had issues getting the systems just to power up. And, I mean, again, it depends on, it seems like the touch was kind of iffy, because he would have to do certain stuff two or three times for the console to recognize it. Well, so
yeah, I mean,
this is the handheld that was delayed in America till after Christmas. So you would expect them to have some, you know, excellent stuff to warrant this delay, because they missed out on their chance to, you know, run off Nintendo's bad showing with the $250 price point and all that business. So they could have taken over this holiday season, but then they gave this holiday season to Nintendo with Mario Kart and Super Mario 3D Land. And now this is their chance to capitalize off of Nintendo's, a boat maneuver. And then everyone now with Nintendo says, well, the boat's not too terrible, but Sony still should have capitalized on it.
Yeah, I thought after coming out of E3, I thought Sony smelled blood and they were going in for the kill. I mean, they announced the price parity with the 3DS where they were both $250. And, as you know, from a tech point of view, if you see a 3DS and a PSV, the $250, the PSV is a better buy. But they gave time, you know, they've given time for Nintendo to fix that price. And then going into the holiday season, they have a lot more games and they announced a lot more games going forward. But we'll get to that in a second. Let's go with the PSV. I mean, like I said, the stage show itself was kind of piss poor. There was a ton of announcements there, but it was kind of iffy announcements. I mean, we had announcements of stuff like the Metal Gear Solid HD Collection, Zone of the Enders HD Collection, Final Fantasy X HD Remastering, and one, you start to see the problem right
basically
there.
Basically buying a portable PS2.
Well, more like, yeah, a portable
so we've
PS4,
got a portable N64, which is the 3DS, and a portable PS2. That's a great way to start it off. Not
the 3DS has two N64 games. Just for the record.
Well, okay, a portable Game Boy and a portable N64 in one.
Well, portable
even
Game,
the Game Boy was
portable.
Hey, if it was a portable 64, I'd be way more likely to buy it.
But yes, I mean,
Bomberman.
Personally speaking, I'm not against like remakes and ports and.
I'm against it when it makes up your entirety of your library.
I'm not even against it then, because I do think there's a place for it. I mean, there is original content there. My biggest problem is, and again, this is probably just me, is that most of these games are dual announced for the PS3. So you're kind of creating an unnecessary competition with yourself, because it's like, do I spend $250 to buy Metal Gear Solid HD Collection on the PSV, or do I get it for the PlayStation 3 I already own?
Well, if I want a PS3 that's cheaper than the PSV to start with.
But I think they're the same price now.
No, they've dropped the price of the PS3 in Europe recently.
It's 250. Oh, I mean, here it's 250 for both, so...
That's fucked up.
Yeah, so it's ridiculous. I keep saying to
people... If you really want to put in context just how crazy this is, it's the same price as a PS3. Like...
I keep telling people that if I wanted Uncharted, I would go and buy a PS3 and Uncharted 3, and it would end up being cheaper than a PSV and Uncharted, whatever the PSV version is.
Golden Abyss.
Yeah, and not only that, as I'd have two more Uncharted to choose from on the PS3, and I'd have a whole host of other games that already are out and are already cheap.
But I mean, obviously the PSP is for, I mean, Uncharted PSP is for people that, you know, loved Uncharted on PS3 and want to take it on the go. And then you also look at the PS3 came out in late 2006, so it's been 5 years, so that technology is going to be cheaper now, whereas this is a brand new, you know, high-end handheld console.
Yeah, and I don't have any problems with that. I mean, I understand that there's more. My thing is, again, is that you're competing. It's like when, you know, some of your big games are also kind of coming out on the PS3, it really becomes hard for like Nintendo. I mean, they have Mario games on both systems, but you never see like the same Mario game that comes out on like a Wii and a DS the same, you know, same time frame. You'll have a like,
in fact, you very rarely see the same game on the Wii and the DS at all.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I mean, you can say it's kind of a ripoff, but you end up, you know, have people buying two different versions that they have that game. Where here, it's like either or. I mean, some people are going to say, "Oh, but I can buy both and I can continue my game." From the PS3 to the PSV.
Is that any kind of... Did that develop at all?
Well, it is a feature. There's a way for you to continue it. The problem with that is it seems like some of it is that you'll need two copies of the game.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, it's like $100 to kind of play a game on the go. And that's not counting the price of the systems. I mean, how much are you really willing to do that? And then you have to factor in the battery life. Because, I mean, one of the things
Lack thereof of battery life.
Well, one of the things that Sony kind of, you know, taught it at E3 was like, oh, you know, you can play Call of Duty on your PS3 and then, you know, you can put your game on the PSV and continue it on the go. That, I mean, the battery life is about 3 to 5 hours during gameplay, and this is without any type of Wi-Fi or 3G. And then you have to factor in the fact that you don't always have a Wi-Fi hotspot, so... And you can't play games over 3G, which came out this week as well. Because 3G, while it has a decent speed, I guess it has a terrible latency.
And it's not reliable at all.
So, yeah, it kind of takes away that advantage of it being like a portable PS3.
Because here's the thing, is the only thing that limits the 3G usage to web browsing, that's what everyone has smartphones for.
Well, I mean, they are, and this is another thing, they are going directly after smartphones. They're going after the 3DS, they're going after the home console market, they're going after the smartphone market, and I think it's fighting too many battles at once instead of trying to...
I think Nintendo is just concentrating on the fact that it plays games, and that's all it needs to do, really. Because, I mean, yes, it had the 3DS has a web browser in it, but they're not saying, oh, you can go and browse wherever you like because, you know, it's got 3G on it. They're just saying that it's there if you want to use it, but it's not going to be touted as a main feature.
And, yeah, and I think this is the same issue that Sony ran into with the PS3, is that they marketed it as everything instead of focusing on...
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah, and it's the same thing, I think, with the PSV. Because, I mean, one of the things they had on the TGS side is, like, you can have Twitter, Facebook, Skype. And I'm just thinking to myself, it's like, I'm either near my home computer or my cell phone does all of that. I'm not going to spend, what is it, $50 for 20... What is it? It's $10 for 20 hours, it's 3G. I'm not going to spend that so I can update Twitter on my PSV.
Not only that, is it may be a network like a lot of people don't like AT&T in the United States, and I can probably understand that. And if they don't want to use AT&T, that's it, they're screwed because it's exclusive.
But I mean, I don't want to harp on the negatives here. But anything came out positive for the PSV here on TGS for anybody here?
I don't know, I wasn't paying attention to it, and I'm not a fan of the whole concept of the PlayStation Vita at all anyway, so...
Well, I think the concept sounded great on paper, and it still has a ton of potential, but I think coming out of this show, it has a lot of work for itself going forward. It's going to hit a lot of the 3DS's stumbling blocks. It's, you know, the price and stuff like that. The software is there. I think it has a more robust launch lineup.
It definitely does. But the game, just I don't like the concept because the games aren't the sort of games that I would play on a handheld anyway.
Well, I mean, that's always, you know, that's... They do have certain games like Gravity Days and stuff like that. That seems more, you know, centralized around the concept of a handheld. But then you run into other problems.
TGS, I didn't even know it happened, actually. And, like, this is pretty much the first sort of mention of TDS that I've heard because, I don't know, I haven't heard anything major that happened out of TGS other than some more PlayStation Vita stuff.
But that's what I was saying. It was a pretty quiet show, hum. There was a lot of announcements that were kind of teased or were expected that never showed up. So I don't know. I mean, it's kind of weird. Even like the Japanese developers didn't really seem to show up. It's kind of like, oh, here's more hands-on time to games you already knew. I think part of it is also the fact that Nintendo doesn't do TGS and Microsoft doesn't do TGS.
Well, Microsoft doesn't do Japan, so...
Well, I mean, they did TGS last year with the whole Kinect and like, the whole hardcore game.
We'll see, but since then they've pulled the 360 out of Japan completely, so...
Yeah, so there's really not... I mean, it's really just like a Sony show at this point with third parties making random announcements. And it seems like nobody really had anything... Oh my gosh, well, we'll get to that in a second. But I was going to say the other thing that came up with the PSV, and I think it's a two-sided problem. It's the lack of internal memory. Because one of the things Sony's trying to do with this device is targeting the smartphone audience. And, you know, they have like the PSN store, which I think is a bit more refined than the 3DS iWare store or whatever. But without internal memory, most people who buy it won't really get to experience
aren't
it.
Aren't the memory cards that you need proprietary as well?
Yeah, I was going to mention
which
that.
Which means I can't do what I really want to do. I really like the ability of being able to pull my microSD out of my phone and stick it into something else no matter what it is, because microSD is pretty much a standard. And if I can't do that with a PlayStation Vita, that just makes it worse because... You know, I would probably take my 16 gig one out of my phone, put the 2 gig one that I got with it back in to put the 16 gig into my Vita. So, you know, I get 16 gigs of storage right there. But now they're saying, oh no, you can't. You need to buy the special memory cards that we make and only we make and we're going to charge you a boatload for. Cheers, Sony. Thanks for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, I mean, again, part of it seems to be, and this also relates to the battery, a lot of it seems to be based around what was the PSP's weaknesses as far as privacy went, which included being able to remove the battery and doing something with that, and the memory card, so they're just trying to combat that, but at the other end, it's really just making it harder for consumers who are honest, which is kind of always the problem with, you know, DRMs and stuff like anti-privacy measures. It ends up screwing over your JIT customers more than pirates because they'll find a way to work around it. But, yeah. You know, like with no internal memory, a lot of people won't access the PSN store, and that's kind of a market that they don't have anymore because, like, you can't, you know, you're not going to go there and then download a game that you can't put
in. Well, but it's not only that, it's you can't save your games unless it saves these special cartridges that the PSV takes.
Well, yeah, you can save your games. I think.
Do they save to the cartridge?
They save to the cartridge for the most part. There are some that apparently won't. So it's one of those things where you're going to be screwed. There's going to be a game that comes out.
And it's like this. It's what Halo does, where if you've got a 4GB 360, you're screwed out of half the features because you don't have enough space. Or in the PlayStation Vita's case, you don't have a memory card.
Yeah. But. I mean, that's the PS Vita. The 3DS on the other end was Nintendo's coming out show. This is Nintendo, we still have faith in its console show, I guess. It's actually probably one of their better conferences in quite some time, where it was limited on the talking, and it was just a bunch of game trailers and announcements. You know, we had... I gotta say this up front. I love Mario. I really do. But I think showing Super Mario 3D and Mario Kart, Paper Mario, Mario Tennis, Luigi's Mansion, and Mario Sonic at the Olympic Games back to back to back to back to back really does kind of point out the fact that they do kind of rely on that franchise too much. Sad thing is, I'm going to buy like 5 out of those 6 games.
You say that now, but we all know you're going for the full 6. Come on.
I don't buy Mario and Sonic at the Epic Games.
Okay, we'll see.
Well, that one's not made by Nintendo.
But yeah, I mean, just having those games back to back to back was just kind of like, on one hand, it's like, yes, Paper Mario looks awesome, Super Mario 3DN looks better, Mario Kart looks fun and stuff like that, but I'm just like, Mario. And I'm sure it's going to be spread out over, you know, a year or so. It won't be like, okay, we have Mario in November, Mario in
But it makes it December. Seem like they're turning out a little too many Mario games. If
yeah.
Like that, yeah.
Because usually they do have a ton of Mario games, but usually it's kind of like, you know, they still, because they have Mario Party 9 and stuff like that, but usually you just kind of get like one or two announcements at a time, showing like 6 of them in a row. And I mean, technically speaking, Luigi's Mansion is kind of a stretch because it doesn't star Mario, and it's a radically different game than any other type of Mario game, but...
It's still the same franchise, really.
Yeah, that's what I mean. There was that. There was announcements from Square, who finally decided they can make something beyond Final Fantasy, Kingdom Hearts, and Dragon Quest with, Bravely Default something fairy?
What? I need to look into this. What?
It's a JRPG, and I believe it uses the AR functionality of the system to... for cutscenes or something like that. I wasn't really paying attention to the trailer, but it looks like an interesting game. Okay, Bravely Default Flying Fairy is the full title of the name.
Have I mentioned I love Japan?
Square Enix is really good at names.
Yeah, they are.
So, I'm assuming that's probably going to be changed when it comes over here, but right now that's the name of the game. It looks pretty interesting. There's a ton of other minor announcements. So many of them not sticking out, I can't even name them. The big ones, I guess, was the fact that Nintendo and Capcom announced Monster Hunter Tri-Third.
And the Frankenstein...
Well, they didn't have the Frankenstein. They didn't have the Frankenstick at the conference, which I thought was an interesting move. But as it came out later on, and this is kind of what I thought when it was first announced. It seems like it's something Nintendo did to appease third parties, because like the games that are supporting it are all. It's like, you know, it's Monster Hunter, it's Resident Evil, it's Metal Gear Solid 3, which I honestly don't get the point of at this point, because you're getting Metal Gear Solid HD collections on PS3, 360,
yeah. PSP.
Why would anybody pick a solo version of Metal Gear Solid 3? I don't know.
Maybe they're just relentless Metal Gear whores will buy anything that says Metal Gear on it. Like,
and are you trying to twist something, Chad?
Oh, no. I'd be down, totally. I can't even say that I won't, because no one will believe me anyway.
It seems like it's, it's like, what, $15-$20 for the device. I'm assuming it's going to be I assume it won't have major support going forward.
It'd be like every other Nintendo peripheral then.
Yeah. Which is it's kind of one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't, because people are complaining like, oh, it means the 3DS is broken and I'm not going to buy it. But then if they don't support it, it's like, why did you come out with this in the first place? So it's kind of... You know, it's up in the air. I assume it's going to be something like the classic controller where you can use it if you want, but not many games will support it.
I think that's the case, because I think that the games that the 3DS is designed to play are not the sort of games that would require two. Anyway, the Wii did all right with one. The PSP did all right with one. You know,
the DS did all right with none.
The DS did fine with none, and...
But I think, again, it seems like, you know, Nintendo wants that third-party support, and if that's the way you get it, that's the way you get it. Because, a lot of these games weren't on the DS, like Resident Evil or Monster Hunter or Metal Gear Solid. So it's kind of a way to appease them and kind of get these big third-party titles signed up. Again, you kind of run into that issue where a lot of this is kind of ports and remakes and stuff like that. Because Monster Hunter 3rd, whatever, I can't keep...
Troy G, isn't it?
I think it's G.
Oh, but... Oh, Jesus, they didn't even try to put 3... Oh, fucking... whatever, I give up on the naming schemes for games on the 3DS.
Or do you mean they didn't even try D to...
Yeah, they didn't even try and add a D into it to make it 3D.
It's not, this is actually, I'm going to say, this is Nintendo's fault. Monster Hunter just has a really odd naming scheme. Because they tend to do, I mean, this is Capcom, but you end up with a lot of games that are just kind of re-released, and it's like, you'll get like portable G, and then G, you know, like the one for the 3GS, the 3DS is called Monster Hunter 3G, which I guess would mean the third generation of Monster Hunter 3.
I don't know.
No, it means it's compatible with most current cell phone networks, I believe.
Probably. But yes, it's a really odd naming convention. It's not about the name or whatever. It's about the idea that, technically speaking, as of right now, Nintendo stole Sony's biggest exclusive franchise on the PSP for the 3DS. And as far as I know, it's an exclusive for the 3DS,
well,
which has made...
As far as we know, at the moment, it may turn out to be not.
Well, I mean, it's Capcom. I wouldn't be surprised if it gets ported everywhere. But Sony has come out and said that as of right now, Capcom has no plans to put it on their system, which I thought was a really stupid move on their behalf, because you don't announce that we don't have this franchise up front. You just say, I don't know what's going on with it, and move on.
Yeah.
Because as it stands right now, Monster Hunter 3G is perhaps Japan's third or fourth biggest franchise. And this one's coming out, I believe it's December 10th. So it's a week before the PSV launches in Japan. So they're going to have to combat that with their on China, which, again, I said, is strong, but it doesn't really have that much own title. So I think it's going to have a rough Christmas this year.
And it's Monster Hunter. The Japanese will laugh it up.
Yeah, that's what I meant. It's that it's kind of that thing where it's like, crap, you know? It's like if it's like you're launching a new console against Call of Duty. It's really going to be difficult to get people's attention when that's out in store.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the newest one. So, so yes. Anything from Anthony or Chad?
No. Can you hear my apathy from there?
Yes, you can.
Monster Hunter is just, I mean, Monster Hunter is obviously big in Japan. It's just never been something that resonated with me. I didn't get it on Wii. I probably won't get these on 3DS.
No, and that's kind of the thing, and I mean, it's always iffy to talk about it, because I got into trouble, apparently I shouldn't say anything on Twitter, because I was like, you know, once Nintendo announced that, I mentioned that now PSV has a really big uphill battle, because it does have to combat the fact that it has to overcome the lack of its biggest franchise, when Nintendo has that in like a Pokemon or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went on to like a whole 2-day thing where people are like, how can the system lose momentum before it comes out and stuff like that. And I think it's hard to understand because Monster Hunter has never been big in the West. And I think I had this discussion with Daniel actually, because he was talking about why didn't they just put it on a console. And the fact is, it's a very niche popular game. It's a Japanese handheld title that works best on Japanese handheld devices. It's, you know, it's been on the PS.
It would probably be more popular in the West if it was on a console.
It's
Japan first, because Japan are the ones that lap it up regardless of what system it's on.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
And they're very big into handhelds, even more so, like way more than we are.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, do you risk your biggest audience to kind of make it popular in the West, when the idea is that it's popular in Japan, and it's really popular in Japan, so we just kind of continue going down that route. I mean, I can see your thinking. I just don't really think there's a market for it in the, because I mean, Nintendo really, really pushed my son to try on the Wii. I mean, it's one of the few games you can't really say that there's a huge marketing push behind it. They had a demo, they had commercials, they had like events and stage shows for it. So it got a huge push. And you can say like maybe it's because the Wii's online networking wasn't the best, but I mean, from what I understand, Monster Hunter it works on Capcom's online anyhow. So I don't think it would be vastly different except for maybe voice chat in the 360 and PS3 versions. So yeah, I really think, you know, focusing it on Japan and their handhelds is their smartest decision. Except it really just bites the PSP in the ass because, the PSP's strongest market was Japan. And the reason for that was Monster Hunter, which also meant it got a lot of Japanese support. without this, I see it having a hard time gaining Japanese support, and Western developers don't really seem that keen on handhelds. I believe that, I think Sony said there are 26 Western developers working on the PSV right now, or North American. I think there's something like 57 European ones. That's not a huge number.
No.
So, it's going to be, we'll see how it goes. I don't want to be I'm not going to make any predictions here because as this year alone has just been interesting between these two devices because it's been like a tennis match. You know, one week.
A tennis match that they both are trying desperately to lose.
So it seems. Cause,
double fault.
Yeah, because it seems like every time you go, it's like this system gained momentum, but it's not that it gained momentum on its own. It's because the other one did something stupid. So, I mean, there were some, you know, wise decisions, like I said, the PSV being priced the same price as the
3DS
was a good decision, but other than that, it was like, oh, you know, the PSV is better than the 3DS because of the price, and then you know, the PSV wasn't out this holiday season, so the 3DS looks better because it's available, and then it's back and forth. So, yeah, I don't want to make any predictions, but it's going to be curious, you know, going forward to see how this handheld cycle pans out. It's turning out to be a bit more interesting than the console front because, honestly, I really think this generation has just gone on too long. There's nothing
really. Who doesn't
really
think that other than developers and publishers? Well, developers and publishers are all fine and dandy with the amount of money that's wringing people out of people's wallets, whereas.
Well, I think it's also, I mean, there are some gamers, and I understand why. Nobody's in the market to spend another $300 or $400 on a console during this, this mini depression of what the kind we're going through. So that makes sense, but it's really just getting to the point where it's just like, eh. Like, the games that kind of get attention are the games that would get attention no matter what at this point.
Like I said, the four previous games that we know will be good because we know exactly what to expect for them because they're like third in the series now. And
yeah,
we're not seeing a lot of new stuff.
Because I think
not selling.
No, it's that it's not selling, and it's easier to launch a new IP at the start of a generation when you don't know what to expect. I mean, if you think about it, the biggest franchise of this generation, like Assassin's Creed, Uncharted, Gears of War, were all launched within one year, 18 months of the system's release, and then they've just been reiterated on since then. I can't think of the last major new IP that kind of launched. I'm sure somebody's going to come up with something I'm not thinking of.
I can't think of any. Borderlands, maybe.
Borderlands, and even then that was, 2 years ago now?
Yeah.
I mean, there's stuff, you know, there's Homefront, Bulletstorm and stuff like that launched, but I don't think they're anything major. They're good franchises, but that's about it. Really quick, we've had technical difficulties in between segment one and segment two. I completely take the blame for my ISP, Cablevision, not doing online. Sorry. I apologize on their behalf. I don't know what they were thinking.
Let you know that me and Chad here have been waiting. When did that call end? Was it like 3:15 p.m.? It's now 10:11 p.m. We've been waiting.
Yes,
with our microphones at our computers, and quite frankly, we might not appear on the podcast again. We've been treated terribly.
I'm going to sue. I hear that's the American thing to do, so that's how I'm going to handle this situation.
And what on what grounds is this your suit? Well, actually, you can't sue because I'm protected by Sony now. So.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that we signed up for that terms of service.
Get two cast action, so I'm going to go with Sony on that, and you signed it verbally when you agreed to be on this podcast. Damn it. Anyhow, yeah, we're just going to, you know, we kind of wrapped up the new segment. It was ended anyhow. Tokyo Game Show was kind of iffy. We're just going to really do, you know, what you've been paying. I just know Anthony wants to talk about his Bit Trip saga.
Mm.
And Chad wants to talk about his drinking game. I honestly don't think there's rules to it other than drink.
I didn't say I wanted to talk about it. I just said that's what I was doing.
Yeah, that's what he's been playing for the last 3 weeks, is a drinking game.
It's not a game, man. It's a way of life.
Well, this is actually the first time that I've done this in a while. I bought two games within, I guess, within 4 days of each other. Yeah. Because I got Star Fox on, actually, I don't know if it was within 2 days. No, it wasn't. It was within a week, whatever. Okay, so Star Fox 64 3D, got it for the 3DS, and played through a level, and, you know, it was kind of what I expected, and I was like, well, you know, it might not be worth the $40 price point, which I still don't think it is, but, you know, I played a level, kind of got what I expected because, you know, it's Star Fox 64. Played it when I was a kid. But I found out that, you know, as I go out, it's actually kind of, you know, endearing to pull out that cartridge and put it in and just play a couple missions. So, I mean, it's done really well. All the music's actually redone. The voice acting is redone for the most part. And it controls well. I don't really use the gyro, the gyro steering and whatnot. It works well, the gyro does, but this game is a game to be played in 3D. And if you use the gyro with 3D, it doesn't really work that well. And it's still just a little bit more accurate to, you know, to just use the control stick, or yeah, the circle pad. But I guess in that sense, it's like Mario Kart Wii, where, you know, if you're actually trying to do well and compete, you would use the either GameCube controller or Wiimote Nunchuck. But if you just want to try something different, get a different feel for the game, you'd use the Wii Wheel there, and you'd use the gyro function here. So Star Fox is good, good stuff. And the other is Bit Trip Saga. Access Games released Bit Trip Saga for 3DS and Bit Trip Complete for Wii. It's just a compilation of all the Bit Trip games they released on WiiWare. And I already have them all on WiiWare, so it'd be pointless to get them there. They added a couple of extra stuff for the Wii version, but it didn't really interest me. So picked up the 3DS version. Bad news is that you turn on the 3D, it goes from a silky smooth 60 frames a second to a not as pleasing 30 frames a second. And sometimes it seems like a little bit less. I don't know if it's just because you can switch on the fly and 30 seems, you know, not so good after that, but
it seems really surprising to me because it's a pretty they're all pretty simple games, aren't they? Graphically?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, yeah.
I also assume they probably didn't really optimize it that much. It is kind of just ports of a WiiWare game with 3D.
You would think so, but there are noticeable differences, just in effects and things they do. And it looks very, very good on that small 3DS screen, but they weren't just direct, you know, put them on this screen ports. They did have to change a couple things artistically.
Okay.
But, yeah, played it, play without 3D. And, I mean, as far as, you know, it's the game's called Bit Trip, so you would think that 3D would make it more trippy, but it's you can go without it. Personally, I'd much rather have a 60 frames a second game with 3D off. So I guess it was kind of like Street Fighter. Street Fighter, when it launched with 3DS, was you'd have to go in and change the menu option to 3D off, but if you did that, you would have a 60 frames a second Street Fighter game, but if not, you'd have it at 30. But that was okay to deal with either way, but with Bit Trip, you really do want it 60 frames a second. So it's just nice to have it portable. As far as how it controls, the Wii Remote tilted in the Wii version naturally, but if you're doing like the Pong games, Bit Trip Beat or Bit Trip Flux, I think, you could either use the control stick or the circle pad, which didn't really work, or you could use the stylus to go on the bottom screen, which actually makes it a little bit easier than the Wii version, but don't play the game without headphones. Put headphones on, and you'll enjoy it. But for $40, I'd say wait till it drops down a little bit. I'm just an admitted Bit Trip fanboy, so that's that.
It's what, five, six games?
Six games.
And they're what, $6 a piece?
The first ones were $6. The few of the latter ones were $8. So you're not really getting a deal.
Yeah, but you're also not really getting ripped off, I guess.
No.
Yeah. I mean, because you bought all, you own all of them for WiiWare as well, right?
Yep.
I guess it's easier to buy in like $6 or $8 chunks than it is to buy in $140 chunks.
Yeah, especially over the course of like 2 years.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the circle pad?
Just in general?
Yeah.
you know, I'm used to it. It worked well in Zelda. It works in Star Fox. Naturally, you know, a control stick is going to be a little bit more precise and a little bit more comfortable. But I mean, at this point, I've heard that the Wii U circle pad is a little bit thicker and a little bit taller, and I'm interested. I really want to get my hands on it. I'll put it this way: I'm not completely turned off by it on the Wii U, but as far as it's on 3DS, I am perfectly okay with it. Like, I have no qualms whatsoever because I mean, you get a control stick on that. A, the form factor, that clamshell design isn't going to work, and B, that control stick gets loose like so many controllers do, and you're going to have to buy a new system. So at this point right now, that circle pad is as
good as it gets.
I guess that too, but right now the circle pad in about 6 months of use is as springy as it ever was. There's no looseness to it.
Okay. I mean, it has some things, but I'm also not really sold on it. So I'm kind of curious to see how a console with it would work.
Yeah.
I'm also not kind of curious because I do kind of just want proper analog sticks.
Same here.
So we shall see if they change their minds going forward.
I think that the ultimate test for that circle pad, at least for the 3DS, is going to be Mario 3D Land when that comes out at Christmas.
I guess it depends, because from what I've heard, it's still kind of like a 2D game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you probably still kind of control it more with the D-pad.
Well,
use the circle pad, but it's kind of directional instead of a full analog control.
Yeah, I actually haven't read Control hands-on. It has to use the circle pad, but what's strange is that if I remember correctly, you have to hold a button to run.
Yeah, you have to hold Y to run.
That doesn't make any sense if there's a circle pad.
No, it doesn't. It's a really...
Yeah, the part where you have to hold a button to run is not something I like at all.
I mean, that was something that...
I mean, if you know that you have to hold the button to run...
Shut up, no one told me.
Well, I mean, that's something that was acceptable with, the DS version of Super Mario 64. Because, all they had there was a D-pad. And since you don't have that analog control, I mean, you have to be able to walk, what if to sneak past Piranha Plants or just to... maneuver a little bit easier on narrow
planes. Wait. You can sneak past piranha plants?
Yeah.
I'm learning new things every day about this game.
Wait, did you not sneak past piranha plants in Super Mario 64?
No, I just fucking booked it. I was like,
honestly.
I didn't even know you could. That's great.
Well, I mean, it's sad enough it took you, 24 years to realize there's a run button in Mario games.
Chad, did you know that if you walk really, really slowly, the re-deads in Zelda won't notice you?
Fuck off.
You can get as close as you want as long as you walk slowly.
I'm going to go play Zelda right now.
Give it a shot.
This is exciting.
This is so... I don't know whether... to make fun of you or to take you serious here.
Because supposedly they can't see, so they just go off sound. So if you walk slowly, they'll just, I mean, you can get up and then hit, the see up button, look straight into its dead cold stare.
Well, that's
I feel like I'm being trolled right now.
I promise. I shit you not. It's one way to conquer your re-dead fear. At least my re-dead fear. I had nightmares when I was 11 and 12.
Yeah, that was messed up. I kind of stopped playing the game for a while, just because of that.
Same way you stopped playing New Super Mario Bros. Wii because you couldn't make certain jumps and figure out the run button.
Well, also I don't like Mario games, so that's
because you didn't know there was a run button.
No, but even before that, I didn't really like them that much.
But if you miss a fundamental part of the franchise in the fact that running and momentum helps you conquer levels better. Of course, it's like saying you didn't notice a shoot button or a melee button in Halo or something like that. But yes, have you been playing anything, Chad, that isn't StarCraft and it isn't drinking?
Does Minesweeper count? I've played a fuck ton of Minesweeper.
Hey, as long as you got that DLC, that game's still going strong.
It's so simple and stupid, but I love it.
Hey, simple and stupid works sometimes,
especially for me.
Oh, you know what I'll be playing through again?
What?
Portal, because Steam has it for freezies
until the 20th.
The 20th, so
Tuesday.
That's cool. Yeah, go buy Steam if you or buy Portal if you haven't bought Portal, because that's awesome.
Free.
Yeah.
I've been playing a game on my phone called Gem Switch, which is really addictive. I don't know what it is with me and gem games, but I find them really addictive.
I'm curious. How many gems do you have to get in a row to make gems disappear?
It varies. I mean, you have to get 3 minimum, and it's not like Bejeweled. It's a mix of Bejeweled and like a puzzle game, because like it's a grid setup, so like sometimes you have various pieces that are aligned differently, so you can switch around them. So like you can have like, you know, there's pieces where it will be like a board around the whole stage, and then you have little pieces inside of it, and then other ones you have like a step ladder, and then you have like smaller pieces, kind of like Tetris blocks and stuff like that. And if there's free room, you can move them around so that you can set up better matches for yourself and get into better positions. It's really addictive, and it's a great way to waste like 5 or 10 minutes to just kind of clear a stage. But that's not what I wanted to talk about. No, I don't believe mobile phones are the future of handheld gaming.
Don't get me freaking started. Whenever investors talk about Nintendo needing to just ditch the hardware and just go with iOS games, I want to light things on fire.
Yes. I wanted to write, but there's enough Nintendo articles out there these days. I don't really need to do anything. I just find it stupid how it's doom and gloom if they don't go this route. And from a business standpoint, it makes no sense, because at the end of the day, they're going to end up using more money than anything they enter this field. And they're going to end up watering down their brand. I mean, even Angry Bird, which surpassed 350 million downloads this past week, I think has made something like less than 100 million bucks. In comparison, I think Mario Kart DS has made something like 600 million bucks, and that sells 22 million copies over the course of 5 years. So it's a revenue stream that is going to dry up, and I don't know why people are so eager for them to kind of enter this arena.
It's because investors see that, you know, everyone's playing, you know, iPhone games or whatever, but what they don't see is that the people that have made video games this big industry to begin with, the people that follow E3 and actually look at live blogs and live streams, aren't the people playing, you know, Cut the Rope and Angry Birds. They're still out there, and they still want those, you know, games with substance. Yeah, a lot of Nintendo's franchises would lend itself well to, you know, iOS gaming, whether it's Brain Age or Picross, or even to an extent Animal Crossing. But, I mean, you have those hardcore, and yes, I use the word, just core gaming experiences like Zelda and Mario that, A, require more than, you know, $5 from the user to get that kind of content, and B...
And that's the other thing. I mean, are you going to pay $5 for it? I probably have something like 3 dozen games on my phone. I spent $1. Amazon offers free apps almost every day.
Yep.
There's a ton of freeware on that thing. It really makes no sense to buy any games unless it gets this really, really remarkable reputation. I mean, I got Angry Birds, I've gotten Cut the Rope, I've gotten Fruit Ninja. Amazon's had them all for free.
And how many of those games are you still playing, like, a month or even 2 months later?
That's the other thing. It's like, I get them partially because they're free, and then I put them down because they have, again, they're pick-up-and-play type experiences, and I understand that there's a market for that. And, you know, I can understand them, you know, thinking that, you know, part of the reason the DS was a success was because of games like Brain Train and Nintendogs, which kind of had that quality to them. But at the same hand, I think, you know, people wanting everybody to jump into this market is really a foolhardy decision and short-sighted. I mean, I've been doing research this week. There are something close to 500,000 apps on the Apple Store.
That's oversaturation.
Clearly. Yeah. It's not only is it oversaturation, it's hard to stand out if you aren't, a top-of-the-line game, or you get a reputation like Angry Birds or Cut the Rope or Fruit Ninja or something like that. And I realize the common thinking is that Nintendo branding is so strong that their games will stand out. The thing that drives me crazy with it, though, is that people are like, nobody's going to buy Nintendo handhelds for their games, but their brands are strong enough to stand out above 500,000 apps. If they're that strong, I think people are going to want them no matter where they are. And, you know, and there's a lot of other things. I mean, in general, I think Apple has made something like $1.8 billion in total on app sales over the last what is it, 3 years since the App Store launch. And I think Nintendo makes something like $10 billion a year or something. Well, I'm sure it's less than that. But they made more than that last year, and that was one of their downgrades. But that's the mini Nintendo rant. I do want to talk about Xenoblade, as I talked about for like the last 2 or 3 weeks now. It's not my fault. The game's taking forever. I'm like 44 hours in now. And
is that my kind of game?
Is it your type of game?
Yeah. I haven't been following it at all, but I feel like you have enough of an idea by this point that you could probably just tell me.
It's a JRPG, but it's very grounded, so I don't know if that, you know, turns you off. Yeah. There's no very crazy things going on right now. It has a pretty, I don't want to say straightforward story. It does have some twists and turns so far. I mean, most of it is just me getting caught up in the side quests, which take on a life of their own after a while, which is so cool. Because you kind of get, like, these mini stories and stuff, and, like, people. I mean, it's kind of weird at times, because, like I mentioned before, like, how they simplify a lot of the RPG elements, which is one of the reasons I'm a huge fan of this game. Like, for instance, you know, like, how in some RPGs you can get multiple quests from different people, but usually that involves you, like, fixing the first quest, coming back to that person, the person giving you an updated quest or something like that. Here, like, if a person's going to give you, like, 3 or 4 quests, you talk to the person, you talk to the person again, you talk to them, like, 4 or 5 times in a row, and you'll get all the quests signed up, and then you can go out and do them one by one. You don't have to do them in order or anything like that. As I've gotten further, there's more, I guess, fetch quests, side quests, though, where you have to get certain items and then you have to return it to somebody, which I mean, they're okay for the most part, but they do piss me off sometimes because it's kind of like Majora's Mask, where characters exist at certain times of day. So
I like that.
It's nice if the towns aren't so big, and if they give you details about people, like they'll tell, like you can, you know, they give you what they call an affinity chart, which is like, you know, relationships between you and your partners and stuff like that, and, you know, builds up over time and using them in battle and encouraging them and stuff. But you also get it for your relationship with the town folks. So like, if you help somebody out and then you help somebody, you know, like there was one quest earlier in the game where I had to help somebody become friends with somebody else by getting them a package, and then that person gave the package to this person. So they have, like a friendship built, and then I get to see that. And then I can click on their profile, and it's like the human race in here is called Holmes. So I'll be like Holmes, and they'll be like available, like he's usually around town from like say 8 a.m. to like 1 p.m. And then that I will know, but I won't know where he is. And if it's a town, because they keep on getting bigger and bigger, it's like I'll know what time they're around, but I won't know where they are. So it's like a 10-minute thing trying to find this one person. I mean, it is nice that the game gives you like a giant exclamation point so you know when you're close to the person. But yeah, I mean, other than that, I enjoy the quests and stuff like that. I enjoy that you kind of get your rewards right away. There's no back and forth for the most part. A lot of them are just kind of like, go out into the field, kill this many enemies, and, you know, as soon as you do it, we'll pop you up. You get the XP, you'll get the money or whatever. I like that, and I like the fact that, I mean, I do this now where I go into a town and instead of, like, you know, doing anything progressing the story, I'll just walk around all 3 times a day and just try to get as many side quests as possible. I did this once. I think it took me like an hour and a half to get all the side quests in a recent town. And then you just go off on your business for like 2 or 3 hours and complete those side quests as you go towards the story so that you kind of get that double experience thing going on there. I'm also kind of overpowered at this point. I think I'm level 44. Most of the creatures I'm fighting are like 36. So side quests do help, but they also kind of overpower you really quick.
I kind of like that, though, because usually whenever I play that kind of game, I will, like, grind until I'm way too over-leveled anyway, just because I like that feeling of being able to crush everything around me. And so I feel like this is essentially the same thing, except it's more kind of organic. Like, you actually have a reason for doing it instead of just being OCD.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, you know, it's nice that they do. What I really love, and I've mentioned this before, is I love the fact that they give you XP for exploration, So, like, today, I randomly was surfing around. I was trying to collect stuff for a side quest, and I realized that there was another level beneath me, and it was just like an ocean. So I swam down there for like 5 minutes, and I discovered this isolated island by itself. I got something like 1600 XP, for it, and it's just a fantastic feeling. It reminds me of Skies of Arcadia, if any of you played that. Where you could discover, like, the secret islands and stuff.
The only GameCube RPG I played was Tales of Symphonia.
Fuck, that was a good game.
I freaking love that game, and that's why I'm so excited for a Tales game to come out for 3DS. Or, hell, just another one to come out, period.
Yeah, Graces is coming out in, like, January. I can't wait.
That's gonna be kind of odd, because Final Fantasy 13-2 is coming out then, too.
It's... Like, that's what happens to all the RPGs that I like. They always come out in the same month as Final Fantasy and get buried. Because it happened in 2010?
Yeah, with White Knight Chronicles.
Resonance of Fate. Which was an amazing game that no one played.
Well, I was about to say, Resonance of Fate just kind of got, because there was White Knight Chronicles 1, and I think there was also Yakuza 3. So it kind of had a lot of competition. That whole time frame was really jam-packed. There was Mass Effect 2, there was Every Rain, there was God of War 3, there was Final Fantasy 13-2. There's a lot of games that came out in those 3 months. I've said it before. Xenoblade right now stands as one of my favorite games of this generation. It sucks that Nintendo of America is so lukewarm on this game. I mean, it's a really fantastic RPG, and I think it really advances the genre forward. It does a lot of things that modernizes it, but also kind of keeps it rooted in tradition. I do like, there's one character, and they keep on taking her away from me, which is kind of pissing me off, that I kind of like using now, because she controls Destiny and everybody else. She has, and I don't want to spoil it too much, but how she works is instead of like, attacking directly, she has, she summons like, buffs or, special abilities, like you can summon one and it will refresh HP as long as it's active. There's one that, you summon it, it gives everybody strength, and there's one that, ups your magical abilities and stuff
so
like that.
So she's Sheena, basically.
I don't play enough RPGs.
No, I'm just putting everything into Tales of Symphonia terms in my head right now.
Okay. Good man. But she summons that, and then, you can keep it around for a bit. And after, they do expire after a while, but what you do is you have to let them go. And that's when she does physical damage. And the longer you hold it there, the stronger it becomes. And also, depending on where it is, because you can have three at a time. So, like, the first one will be the weakest, and the third one will be the strongest. But after a while, you have what she goes into, what they call an elemental state, where like, any type of like fire and lightning and stuff will do double damage while she's in that state. So she's kind of cool to control just because, you kind of hang back and just kind of, just help out. It's odd because not many people play supportive characters in games, but she kind of serves that purpose. I enjoy playing as her. She's different. I will say this, though, I really am not a fan of the three-man team because it always feels like I want more and more person on my team to balance it out, but that's just me. I think that's it. Unless you two have anything else to add.
October GSL starts tonight, so that's cool. You should all watch the Global StarCraft League.
Okay, anybody else? I will just say this, I'm excited, as much as I love Xenoblade and stuff like that, I'm excited for the fall game season to start, and for me personally, it starts this Tuesday with Gears of War 3.
Fuck years.
Okay, apparently not everybody on this podcast can play Gears of War 3.
My favorite Xbox 360 game, Gears of War 1. And now,
did you like the second one?
It was alright. They nerfed my sniper rifle, so I was pretty pissed about it. But I played it off and on.
Sniper rifle is even weirder in Gears 3.
I won't know about it.
Oh. So I was going to ask if you played the beta, but I guess you didn't have your Xbox then either.
No, that's when it happened. There was that trick that I'm sure, well, whatever. Guess what? I cheated Microsoft fraud and all that, whatever. So I got a beta key. Fired up my 360, entered it in, hit download, booted up the beta, and it fucked it. That's how much fate loves me. Oh, you're excited for this beta, aren't you? I'm gonna kill your Xbox now.
I guess that's what they call karma. But yes, I'm excited. I'm doubly excited for the fact that it's 4-player co-op now. Gears of War is probably one of my favorite co-op experiences this generation. It's right up there with Left 4 Dead and Borderlands. And 4-players, you know, I'm calling dibs on Coltrane. I hope he's one of the playable characters. But yeah.
Is Baird playable again? That dude was
I'm
awesome.
I'm wanting for Jack Bauer as a playable character.
I think it's Marcus Cole.
I was Jack Bauer once. That was a crazy night.
And I went, how drunk were you? Well, you know what? Never mind. And I think Anya is the final character. But yeah, I'm excited for that. I guess Anthony started already with Star Fox and Bit Trip. What is your first fall game, Chad?
I don't know, probably Skyrim, I guess.
Wow.
I'm really not that stoked for this fall season at all, to be honest. I don't know, there's just nothing that really stands out to me.
Oh yeah, and I forgot you hate Batman for some odd reason.
I don't like the way it plays. I don't know.
I understand the whole soul.
I guess a lot of people like it, and if you like the way it plays, then it's very good at that. But I don't, so I don't like it.
What's wrong with how it plays?
It doesn't. I don't enjoy it. It doesn't. I don't know. That's just. Do I have to explain why I don't like things? Irrational hate. That's why.
I'm okay with irrational hate from time to time, but not with something as great and as world-renowned as Batman Arkham Asylum.
Yeah, I think I am probably the only person I've met that didn't like that game, and I really don't know why, but I just didn't enjoy playing it.
Okay, well, fair enough. I'm not going to keep you here any longer to explain yourself, even when you're wrong. So, yes, and I also realized I didn't do introductions, or I don't think I did. So for Daniel, who's probably fast asleep, because it's something like 4 a.m. for him now.
I'd say it's like 4:30, yeah, 20 to 5.
Yeah. Anthony, Chad, and myself. This has been Dual Wielding episode 45.
Catch you guys later.